podcast. It's our top ten games.
Yeah,
it's,
video games.
Yeah, so we got a bit of an epic one. So
it's really good.
Thanks for joining us in part two here.
We got me, Colin, and Brian, and let's just we did numbers 10 through 6 in our last cast. Let's do numbers 5 through 1. But before we do that, let's go over what we did in the last one. So my numbers 10 through 6 were: number 10 was Basketball GM. Number 9 was Peggle. Number 8 was Portal. Number 7 was Shining Force 2. Number 6 was The Sims 3.
My 10 through 6 was Super Mario Bros. 3, Fire Emblem Fates, Banjo-Kazooie, Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, Super Mario RPG.
For my number 10, I had Amazing Island, followed up by Majora's Mask. Number 8 was Miss Pac-Man. Number 7 was Fallout 3. Number 6 was Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Alright, so I'm leading on number 5, right, fellas?
Yes.
Alright, so this is the one that's going to incite a brawl, if you will.
I was wondering when this was going to happen.
So, remember, the criteria here was, like, what is the most, your personal favorite game, not the best game. So my number 5 is Super Smash Bros. Brawl for GameCube. Which is...
GameCube?
Or, sorry, Wii. Which is for Super Smash Bros. Fans, which I know at least Colin, among the three of us, is considered probably the weakest of the four Smash games. Which I've never been entirely clear on why that is. I know part of it is... pratfalls, and part of it is that Meta Knight is unbalanced or whatever.
Also that the physics is slower, right?
Yes, the overall pacing of the game and the battles that you have with your friends or in competitive play, which I am a competitive player in the Super Smash Bros. Scene. So, what tripping? One, super annoying. Nobody likes tripping.
You can trip in real life, though. It
yes,
just
you
brings
can.
Home the reality of it. So let's hear,
okay,
what about
so,
Brawl, though?
So, Brawl. Okay, so we can debate the merits of it, and I'm sure there... I'm guessing that between the two of you, there will be at least one Super Smash Bros. In the future. But we'll see. Anyways, so for me, this is just like such a personally meaningful game. I played hundreds of hours of this in college. It was when it was like the newest one out. Mm-hmm. Like literally our default weeknight or weekend night was to drink some beer and play Super Smash Bros. Brawl on our TV at our college house, which we call the Bat Cave. Particularly me, my friend Seabag, and my friend Birdman. The three of us would play all the time. We had like a super intense rivalry. I was Game & Watch, Seabag was Ganondorf, and Birdman was Zelda. So like those are kind of oddball characters. Like we didn't get into like the super competitive meta aspect of it, but like we had such good balance between the three of us with those main characters, and we called them our lasties characters because we would play a lot of games, but like our last game always had to be our best characters, and like we just had like this whole epic rivalry that just dragged on, and like we got so into it, and man. Just some of my best memories playing games are goofing around with my two college buddies playing the Brawl. And I this is another one that made my top 100 everything. And I wrote like a very personal memoir, silly style post about it, which you can go and read at some point, where I have lots of inside jokes from our Brawl games. But this was just like my social college, played a ton of it game.
I have two things that I think are really positive about this game. One of them is the characters in the actual game. Who knew that Solid Snake was going to be on...
And Sonic. Don't forget Sonic.
No. I was going to get to that, but I think Solid Snake is more of a surprising choice than Sonic, even
right.
though Nintendo and Sega are rival companies. But, like, Solid Snake came out of nowhere.
Yes.
He has only had one game on a Nintendo platform at all. And there's only one character that shocks me even more than Solid Snake, which I'll get into a little bit later.
I know what it is.
Okay. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. But, man, that he was amazingly fun to play as, too. And they just worked him in so well. And the second thing, oh, man, I wish they had this in the newest iteration of Super Smash Bros. For Wii U. Subspace Emissary killed it. That was my favorite. You know, you had the All-Stars and you had the Classic Mode in Melee. But Subspace Emissary destroyed both of those, in my opinion.
Cool one-player mode, for sure.
Yeah,
it
sure.
connected, like, Brian says he hates the connectivity of Marvel universes, and it Smash Bros. Is all about connecting the video game
universes. I mean, I feel like in Smash Bros. It works, because, I mean, it's the whole premise is just that, oh, you got Link and Yoshi in the same thing.
Which I'll probably argue about double standards later with you about that, but it did it so well. Like, you didn't think that they could connect the characters in any better way, but it has multiple paths and different things you can do based on the characters you choose. And,
Well, for me, the reason that it's so high is, like, I can totally respect that that's, like, a thing you admire about it. And, but for me, it's just, like, the ritual of, like, playing it and enjoying company with friends. And, like, this was the game where we both... It was, like, a good balance of, like, super competitive between us, but, like, also still really fun and, like, just always engaging. So that's why it's there
for me. That's why it kills it for me, is because I can't get into playing it the
It's competitive
the other
in
side.
A fun way, but it's not, like, competitive at, like, a super meta intense level.
I'm not saying anything against your competitive with friends, but for me, when I play Smash with my friends, I would rather pick any other Smash game. Besides that one, to play with my friends.
Okay, so who's up next for number five?
It would be me.
Colin.
Okay.
My number five is a little bit the characteristic for all the other ones is Bioshock Infinite, which is the first-person shooter I have put on this list. It is my favorite first-person shooter. It has a really in-depth story to it. I don't know if any of you played it. It's about this guy named Booker DeWitt, who he's like they don't give much backstory on him, but all you know is that it's this girl. You have a debt to be paid, and you have to get this girl to the people to have your debt erased, and that's all they give you with. And you find yourself in the city in the clouds, where it's based on a time period. Sort of, I think
it's like a retro-y vintage. World,
it's kind of
right?
like Fallout, sort of.
Mm-hmm. I think it might harken back
it,
even
it
earlier
might,
than that.
1800s, probably.
Or like
or
the
late
early
1800s.
Like yeah. 1920s type
right.
thing.
Right, so the first one is definitely like 20s, 30s.
I think
like
Bioshock
the radio age.
Infinite goes...
Infinite, is it seems more Victorian.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So, they got like airships.
Yeah. So the cloud in the city idea, I mean, if you watch Star Wars, you've seen it. But I like Bespin in Star Wars, and I like... what was it called? Columbia in this game. It is really nice to look at. You can, like he says in Super Mario 64 and Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, you can look around and everything looks so pretty. And it's like you're actually in a city in the clouds. Like there are people and they're doing things and it's like normal. But then you also have the action segments, which some people might say it's a little repetitive. And towards the end, it kind of the original story. They have two story DLCs, which expand onto it greatly, and I would highly recommend it. They used to be on sale. I don't know if you can probably find it on sale.
Yeah, they definitely the prices on the Bioshock games have fallen way down, which is nice.
It's good. It's good. And it's so rich in its story, and the ending is what it's really known for, because at the time... There wasn't, like, a game that you would finish and then you would, like, lay awake at bed at night and maybe Portal. Maybe Portal came out before this and that was another game that you could probably do this with, but not as much. But you would just lay there and be like, what was that? What just happened to me? I just had an emotional roller coaster and I don't know how to feel about it. And you would just think for hours about what it was and then some people may argue that getting the ending at first is a little bit frustrating, but I think it just adds to it. And they actually, if you didn't want to like YouTube it or whatever on what other people's thoughts or explanations of it, you can wait till the DLC packs, which greatly explained the ending.
That's
and
cool,
added
yeah.
on to it.
Yeah. I'll say I did. The only Bioshock game I played much of is the very first one, but I loved the retro, the like... radio age dystopia.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, you've got the undersea city And, like, both the bright side and the dark side of advancing technology in, like, an early stage.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which I like in the DLC packs. You actually go back to Rapture, the place that is where the first game takes place in. I'd highly recommend it. I'm not talking about it too in-depth because I know you two haven't played it. Yeah. And someday in the future, I hope you guys do. It is good.
It sounds like I've played the first one for, like, 2 hours or something. I didn't get hooked on it. That's not to say, because it sounds like everything I've heard about these games sound like it would be in my wheelhouse, so I definitely want to give them a try at some point.
I think you guys should. Are we ready to go on to...
We are.
So, I am next.
I haven't said my number five.
Oh, you haven't?
Yeah, no. Pump the brakes.
So, to roll it back a little bit...
I thought you did.
No, so to roll it back a little bit, I actually have Super Smash Bros. 4 at number five.
Ooh, interesting.
And so this is my bread and butter. I did like Brawl. Because it introduced one of my mains, who is Wario. I just love Wario to death. He's got his explosive fart that blows people away. He's got his motorcycle. Basically, just every way that you could think to annoy people. Yeah. Wario's got it. And then when he wins, he rolls around and slaps his just going, wah, 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 wah.
May I just say that when I first played with Brian, the bike was really annoying. I know it annoys more... we play a lot with our coworkers, and it annoys them a little bit more, and it doesn't annoy me anymore because I know how to get around it.
Colin's really good at Smash, and he gets me off the bike, and yeah. I have not really gotten over it.
I know how to get around it now, and I'm a competitive player, specifically in the Smash 4 scene. I used to switch between Smash 4 and Melee, but now I'm dedicated to Smash 4. I know how to get around it. Other people are annoyed by it, but it was really annoying and tough, and it definitely triggered me a little bit.
But so the reason that I like 4 over the other installments is, like I said, I love character creators, and what I'd been saying since the Wii came out was that the next Smash, which at that time was Brawl, has to have custom characters. You gotta be able, you know, it's got this whole Mii system. Why the heck in Brawl can you not play as a Mii? And then finally in 4 they added it, and my main now is a Mii of Count Gauntlet. He's got all the bombs. He's got the little Samus bomb that plunks out the bottom. He's got the solid snake grenade bomb that shoots in a little arc.
Yep.
And he's got the Zelda invisible telekinesis bomb that you can zoom across the stage and pester people over there without them even seeing it.
Which definitely puts people on edge when we play multiplayer.
I can dig it. It's cool that you get to play. I get to battle Count Gauntlet. That's like a life dream of mine.
I love it.
In a video game.
That's right.
He's my final boss.
That's really cool. I think it's interesting that they added custom moves and characters and Miis.
And they spread up Brawl a little bit so that people who are super competitive like it more and will play it with you. And
they took,
I like it.
They took out tripping, which was great. So, bro, you got on
the number
one?
4, I believe.
Number
yes.
4.
So now it is my turn.
Led by Colin.
Going on... Brian's topic, Smash Bros. I couldn't really pick...
Number 4?
Yes.
4 at 4?
No.
Or where are you?
Let me get on that. Let me get on that. I can't really choose a Smash game, and it feels like such a cop-out for me to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, that's a cop-out.
Is it the franchise of Smash?
It's franchise, yeah. It's such a cop-out, but I can't choose
one. I feel like you'd already declared
really?
What
I seem
it was.
Like you would have a first. I mean, you're the guy who's so big into it.
As I've explained, I'm dedicated to playing Smash 4 competitively, and I'm huge into the competitive scene, but each game has their own unique style to it that like makes me want to play all of them. Brawl has Subspace Emissary and good like the characters that I like. 64 has this unique gameplay. It's
the classic.
Yes, this classic, which I do enjoy going back to. Melee has the super competitive scene that's really fun to watch, and it's really fast paced, but it's also fun to play with your friends, and I like the classic and all-star modes in that one. And Smash 4, as I've previously stated, I really like the competitive scene, but there's nothing else in that game content-wise for me. The All-Star and Classic modes don't feel as crisp as the other ones, you know? The Classic mode in Melee had these stages that you went through, and the Classic mode in Smash 4 is such a cop-out because it's just... you playing against CPUs over and over and over again, and Melee had a little bit of it, but it had like the Mario stage where you platform through the like Goombas and with whoever you wanted.
That adventure mode was neat.
That was cool.
And that's why I feel like I really can't pick one. But I want to say something really quick about Smash 4 that I love is all of the characters they added in it. They added Ryu. They added Corrin.
Can I say who I thought you the most surprising was?
Yeah, I like to see who.
I assume you're talking about Cloud.
Cloud Strife. Yeah. He has never been on a single Nintendo console for a video game, but he's somehow in this game. Like, who thought that Cloud Strife would be in Super Smash Bros.? I know that a lot of people have been begging for it since before Brawl, and a lot of people were expecting him for Brawl, but I'm finally glad that they put him in Smash 4.
What a time to be alive.
It definitely is a great time to be alive. Definitely. I also want to talk a couple seconds about his costumes. I like that they put in his traditional Final Fantasy VII costume and Advent Children, the movie. Real quick, that movie sucked, but more on that later.
Yeah, I do like that they have so many different alternate costumes. You got all the Koopa kids. Mm-hmm. You got, both of Wario's costumes, the classic and the WarioWare.
I'm also glad they brought back Lucas, Mewtwo, and Roy. Some people may, I think Brian.
But where is Pichu?
Yeah, I do miss Pichu.
Pichu. I main Pichu in Melee.
That's another reason I can't pick one over the other.
But where are the Ice Climbers?
That's true. I don't know. I also miss the Ice Climbers.
They were my actual favorites in Melee. All
right. So that I guess that's enough on my number four.
So where puts us? Where are we at with number four?
You are on next? Number four.
Okay. So my number four is Destroy All Humans.
Ooh, this is a good game.
PlayStation 2. Now, this game, if you're unfamiliar, I would describe it as Grand Theft Auto with telekinesis.
It is so good.
And so it's very much influenced by the gameplay of Grand Theft Auto. You're running around a town, and there's a threat level that rises,
so
and
you
it will control what you interact with. But yes, so you play as an alien in the 50s. And so I'm a sucker for 50s sci-fi B-movies. It's my bread and butter. And this is a game just completely dedicated to recreating that schlocky feel of the 50s movies and poking fun at it. And you've got like all the levels you would expect. There's like a farmhouse level where you've got to like abduct sheep and cows and stuff, and then it kind of escalates until the final level you're in Washington D.C. and you can take into a saucer and destroy the Washington Monument and like pick it up and ram it through the Capitol Dome.
Wow.
And it's just a lot of fun, a lot of references, which is big for me. And when you beat the game, as you go through and collect enough brain stems, you unlock various material, one of which is the complete film of Teenagers from Outer Space. So, like, it's just icing on the cake that you get an entire, two-hour 50s B-movie that's in the public domain.
Yeah. I
haven't played this one.
Did the first one have the gravity discs? Or was
that was the
second one.
Okay. Which, to me, was the best part of the second one.
The second one with the gravity discs, me and my cousin would just play with those for hours and hours of things just flying around randomly.
Yeah, in the second one, which was also great, but not as great, that one takes place in the 60s, and you go to various countries. So you go to, like, mod-style England, and there's like hippies in California, and you end up in Japan at one point. But the best part of the second one is you got this weapon called the Delocator, and it's little contact points that you stick onto things that causes them to fly around in random directions.
Yeah, and
that's awesome.
So, one of the cool things about that was like it was really glitchy. So there'd be like people flying around through the ground, like half of them would be through the ground, and it just was icing on the cake that happened, because you would just sit there laughing.
I'd say the glitches are half of the reason to play these two games.
I mean, and yes, like if you show me a video of video game glitches, I turn into like a nonstop laughing like mess.
They add so much.
Then
to
you
it.
Would you would love this.
Okay,
game.
you would like it.
Awesome. So PS2 is it on other systems or just PS2?
I think that one was just.
The third one was on the Wii.
But yeah, the first two were just PlayStation 2.
So,
and then the fourth was on Xbox 360.
So we're getting to the heavy hitters, the top four.
Yep.
So my number four is Final Fantasy 6/3. It's now goes by 6. It was originally released in the US as 3
because,
on the SNES because of the order they released the games in the U.S.
Yes, and I was actually expecting this one, because on your top 100, you put that as your favorite Final Fantasy game,
yeah.
Which I didn't really want to talk about that much in the previous part when we were talking about Final Fantasy Tactics, because I think it would have spoiled this part.
Well, thank you
so
for...
So what would you say about 6/3?
Yeah, so this is an SNES-era Square game. It's an RPG, and it basically brings like the SNES 2D graphics to like their absolute, and like just the SNES presentation to their absolute maximum. There's like an opera scene where they like have the opera. It's just the presentation is just so, they bring it to such epic, incredible heights, and the story is so good. And personally, in retrospect, I find it like way more interesting than the PS1 stories. I don't know if I want to spoil. There's a twist about 3/4 of the game through that is probably my favorite.
I haven't finished it yet, so
probably
I'm actually
my
playing
favorite
through it
twist
now.
In any video game. So because you're still playing it, I won't spoil it.
Yeah, please don't, because I am playing through it currently, because I played other Final Fantasy games before this one, and I do want to get through that one, because I've heard it's really good.
Yeah. This is a game I've only heard fantastic things about, but nobody wants to spoil,
characters.
So I know nothing about the story, other than there's a scary clown or
something.
Yeah,
the villain is one of the better villains of any like intellectual property I've encountered. It's this like insane clown guy, not a posse, but an insane clown dude named Kafka, and he's like, he grows more and more insane as the game goes, and it's... I mean, the gameplay itself is like solid RPG, just like core RPG, what you expect from a perfectly executed Square RPG. But it's like, it's the story, it's the presentation, the everything around it that adds on top of the very well-polished system that makes this my favorite Final Fantasy game. It's just like everything executed to the max, basically, so...
Yep.
Final Fantasy VI, transcendent experience, perfect RPG, go play it.
It's good. Brian, we're moving on to
number three. Alright, so we're getting up there, and in terms of transcendent experience, this hits home for me. It's Katamari Damacy.
Oh, ooh, so good.
Now, I was actually going to deploy a so good in this one. Now, I just, such a pure concept. I read a blurb about this in a gaming magazine before it came out, that you have you play as an alien, a diminutive alien prince, and you're rolling a ball, this weirdly shaped space ball that sticks to things, and it picks up things that are smaller than the ball currently is. But it, every time you pick up something, it adds to the diameter of the ball, mm-hmm. and then you can pick up bigger and bigger things. And it just... Oh, it just feels so satisfying to consume. Like, just you roll through this kooky world, getting bigger and bigger, and gradually the things that once towered over you are now afraid of you and like running for the hills. But you're just gonna roll them up, and so you've got the eye popping colors, you've got amazing music.
The music is really good.
It's a mix of, like, there's some lounge singing, there's some a lot of electronic blips and bloops.
It feels like anime music almost.
Yeah, it's very, this whole game, very extremely Japanese.
It is.
I will interject that, like, me and my brothers, around the time that Rickrolling was a thing, me and my brothers, the equivalent of the Rickrolling that we did to each other, like, we always tried to get each other to go somewhere. It was the video of the intro music to this, which is...
Yeah, that one. Oh, good.
Oh, you watched it.
Last year at MAGFest. Well, not this year, 2015. The guy who did the music for Katamari Damacy came and gave a concert,
really?
And I saw that. It was really fun.
That's awesome.
One of the things I really liked about that game was the story about how the guy...
Me too!
The guy, like, he like, erases all the stars from existence, and he's like, go clean it up for me. And the guy, the main character...
I feel like... Go on, sorry.
the main character has to do it, like,
yeah, because otherwise,
just because the guy said so.
It's such a kitschy, clever story.
And what I love also about it is, yeah, the story's good, but you could play through it in 2 hours.
Exactly.
You could sit down in an evening and play through it like it's nothing, right, and just have a lot of fun, and then you could do it again in 2 months.
And you'll dig it just as much. Yeah.
Like Super Mario RPG.
I'm 100% on board with this pick, and, like, if we were going down to 20, I feel like Katamari Damacy would probably be in my 20. So
yeah, I have a lot of strong picks for my top 20 that just barely missed top 10 for me. So damn.
So what, isn't there a thing that they say at the end of every level? It's like a sentence, like it's not look around you, but it's like, I don't know.
I think there are some weird goofy things that they do, and it'll suck you in
with the royal rainbow.
Yeah,
where it comes out of his mouth, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, so we're number three.
Yes.
So I kind of foreshadowed this. So I was talking about how I prefer the BioWare approach to the Bethesda approach. So my number three is Dragon Age Origins, which is came out probably around 09. It came out on Xbox and PC, but I would say that the general consensus is that the PC version was by far the better version. Yeah. And that's the only one I ever played it on.
That, my dad got really into that game. I never really did, but he played a lot of it.
It's so good, and it's like, so BioWare in general, especially like the later games, basically what happens to me in these games is, like, I start to get into it, and I get into, like, the gameplay, and I really start to get good at it, but then I realize that I actually enjoy interacting with the characters, because they always have this segment or this sequence where, like, it's like the camp in between your quests, and you can, like, walk around your camp and talk to your characters and, like, have dialogue with them. And I always dug the character development even more than I dug the actual game and the story. And there's just 50 reasons I could talk about that I love this game so much. So one is that the story is really open-ended. So it's like a lot of games that are supposedly, like, non-linear are actually fairly linear, but it's just, like, when do you go to the encounter to do the story? But this one, you actually have a choice about, like, what actually happens. Like, you can pick out of, like, there's, like, two characters. You can choose which one is going to be king. And, like, all these different things. You can choose who's going to rule over this land based on, like, the story decisions you make throughout the game. Just, a really engaging story experience. Another thing I really love about this game is that a lot of RPGs, especially recently, and I would say recently is like the last 10 years, basically, is it has this morality. Can you be the bad guy or can you be the good guy? So Dragon Age kind of has that, but it explicitly does not define what is a good guy and what is a bad guy. It just gives you all these options. And so it's like a more true role-playing experience. And in oftentimes you're choosing, like, what is the best of all of these bad options. And, like, it's a really thought-provoking game and just, like, really open-ended, but also focused in that, like, every encounter, like, regardless of what decision you make, like, feels, like, really responsive to what you've done. Like, that was the decision that they designed the game for. And it's got some cheesy things, like, it's over the top with blood spatter, and the blood spatter stays on the characters, and so it looks ridiculous in cinema, and, like, the character models are pretty ugly, but, like, the game, the voice acting, the story, the tactical combat, just like, peak game for me. This is like BioWare at its purest and best.
So I haven't played much of Dragon Age Origins, but I did play another BioWare game that was pretty popular. I don't know if you've heard of it. Star Wars The Old Republic?
Yeah, that's the MMO.
Yes. So you reminded me of the dark and light, and that was a huge thing in Star Wars The Old Republic, but I think that the way that Dragon Age Origins, from the way that you're describing it, did it better, because it gave you the choices and everything that you could choose from, but it gave you which one was the light one and which one was the dark one.
Right.
Which doesn't seem like a good idea to me, because, like, if you wanted to be the dark person, you could just choose the dark side,
right,
or you could choose the light side. But I like the anonymity of being able to randomly choose either based on what you know, feels
it's
good
like
to
it's,
you.
It yeah. really forces you to think, because otherwise, you go through the game and you're like, I'm doing a good guy run.
Exactly.
And then you go play it again. I'm doing a bad guy run. And, like, that's it. It's, like, not really anything. But exactly. Dragon Age, you actually get to roleplay. So.
Yeah. I've not played that game, but one that sounds like it's vaguely similar. I watched my sweet mate in college play through Fable 2. And the Fable games, you can steer based on morality, basically. And so the decisions that you make steer the story. And it seemed like a really cool concept. I can definitely see how people would get into a game like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
All right. So.
I'm kind of tense like about these top three picks, because that's pretty Ooh. Hefty praise. So
yes. So moving on to my top three. So this was a game that was actually mentioned earlier, and I held my tongue so badly not talking about this game at all. It maybe seemed like I didn't like the game, but it is Super Mario Sunshine. That game.
Oh, nice.
Is,
I knew he loved this game.
So I probably talk about this at work all the time, and you mentioned that it was a black sheep, and it really is. Not a lot of people.
I did not know that you were into this one.
Really like this game like I do. So the NES was the first console I played on, but I didn't actually own the NES. It was my uncle's. The GameCube was the first console that I had ever owned, and Super Mario Sunshine was one of the first games that I had ever owned. And I played, when you're a kid and you only have a select library of games, you play the crap out of those games, right? So that was one of those games where I spent hours and hours of hours in my time in, and I it was the first 3D platformer for me to 100%. I actually almost left this off my list because I originally put Super Mario 64 to be in the slot because when the games were flooding into my head, you think of the first things. So when I thought of Banjo-Kazooie, I was also thinking Mario 64 at the time. But I had almost forgotten about this. But it pains me to think that, because I have had so many good memories with this game of playing it at my grandparents' house and playing it in my basement and playing it with my cousin. And me and my cousin run through that game every couple of years.
It's kind of an open world Mario game in some ways.
It is. And a lot of the secrets on Isle Delfino and all the things to collect, the blue coins, the all the challenges,
right.
And extra secrets, like if you know the levels where you lost the flood,
yeah.
You can go back. Yep, you go back to those with the flood, and you collect 10 red coins for an extra secret star.
Whoa!
And that it was just so it expanded. It took what Mario 64 did, expanded it, but didn't bring it to the point where it was overcomplicated. And the flood is so fun to use. I don't understand why people don't like the flood. And I used to previously mention Super Mario Galaxy, and this game is compared with Mario 64 and Super Mario Galaxy, but I rarely see people pick this one out over either of those. But I think it holds its own, and not a lot of people are going to defend it. But
well, you know that I am.
Yeah.
I already said I was, so.
You defended it.
I've just never really played this one. I played a tech demo at, like, Best Buy back in the day, like, you know, Christmas 2000 or, like,
right.
When it was still in the early stages and you could, like, kick a durian around.
Yep.
You could run around the town kicking a durian and it's like, well, these graphics are nice.
Yes.
But I don't know. I never picked up a copy, so I can't really comment. Maybe it's good. Maybe I played it at a friend's house and the mechanics of the thing, the jetpack, threw me off. It felt very different. It didn't feel the same as the way
different.
That N64 and Galaxy felt.
It's
but
like,
I haven't really gotten into it. I will concede that.
It's if you played a lot of Super Mario 64, it has a lot of the same physics. Mario himself, without the flood, controls pretty much the same.
Okay.
With the exception of, do you remember the crouch jump that you can do with Mario in
64? Yeah.
That's the only thing that he's missing, basically.
Okay.
This game also has, like, such a good, like...
storyline?
Oh, no, I was going to say it has such a good unsolved mystery in it that
Is that Peach is the mother of Baby Bowser?
Okay, that's a good conspiracy theory, and it's very much backed up by
this game. That was debunked, actually, later in the game.
Oh, huh. Well, this one is... There's a spot in the game, because you can, like, use your camera, the C-stick, to control the camera...
Yes.
And if you, like, move it at a certain spot on a specific way, like, under a mound of sand, there's a book. It's like a rendered book.
It's in the glass bottle level. It's the one where you collect 10 red coins, and you something really weird about Super Mario Sunshine 2 is, like, there's just one level where there's, like, a regular bottle. Like, the size... the size of maybe this. The two liter Mountain Dew bottle that Mario gets launched into.
Okay.
And it's like the one level in Super Mario 64.
Where the ghost house is inside the thing, right? Then you hop into the thing.
Sort of like that, but it's also a mixture of that. And do you remember the secret level in Super Mario 64 where you swam around?
Yeah.
To get the red coins? It's like that, but with the flood. There's a camera angle where it's just a secret book. And a lot of people have theorized what this book is about because it's behind a door. And some people think that you could have gone behind the door at one point in early development of the game and they just never took it out.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people have theorized about that.
So there's the mystery book. It's like, what is the book? Oh, how do you get it? Anyways.
I always like when games do that, keep you wondering. Like in Mario Kart 64, there's the green thwomp in the cage. And people always tell me, oh, if you do the right thing, you can get the thwomp out.
Like Sonic and Tails.
Mess everybody up.
The best one is Pokemon, which somehow Pokemon has not come up in this conversation.
No, it's no spoilers.
Yeah, no, it's not on my list. It just got bumped off. There was some consideration on my part, but not
quite. That could have made my top 10, but...
It makes my top 20.
Red and Blue would make my top 20.
Yep.
But anyways...
Pokemon Snap was very nearly in my 10.
The truck near the boat.
Yes.
You can surf to, but what is the truck? Why is there a truck there?
Yes.
What does it do?
It's a lot like that. Also, one quick note that I want to have before we end our conversation on Super Mario Sunshine is actually Yoshi was in a 3D Mario platform in Sunshine before Super Mario Galaxy 2. Sunshine did it first.
All right, I just never experienced it.
Yeah. All right, so let's hear number three, Ryan.
Okay, number two actually.
Wait, so you led number three?
Yes, you did.
So I think you start off our two. Is that right?
I started three. You start off two, and I do one.
Yeah.
So.
Number two.
Which I kind of feel sad about.
I'm tense. Are you guys tense?
I'm excited.
Number two. Console. SNES.
Ooh, okay. Something that's not Final Fantasy
VI. It's going to be a Mario platformer.
Super Mario World.
Ooh, okay. Let's get into this one.
Alright, so I have been obsessed with this game for years and years. And so I went through a phase where I was determined to 100% every 2D Mario game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I did it like basically up through the first DS game. I didn't do it for one of the Game Boy games, but I did it for the other. And then I did it for all of like the main console games. Anyways, Super Mario World was like my jam. It's like, I know that if you talk to purists, they have some complaints about it because it's not as challenging as some of the other ones, but, like, man...
It's pretty challenging.
I played the heck out of it. Like, me and my friend... One of my favorite memories... Earlier tonight, when the mic was off, we were talking about some of our memories, and one I had was always going to drive down to visit my friend Jimmy, who was my best man, mm-hmm. and playing... One of the things that we always did was we played Super Mario World to see how fast we could beat it. And we got down to 15 minutes. We did.
Wow, that's pretty good.
We would hand the controller back and forth in each level, and we beat it in 15 minutes with, like, the shortest possible route. And I just totally dig two-player. Like, this is, like, 2D platform perfection, and, like, it's never been done better for me than in Super Mario World. I mean, great level design, great just everything. I mean, I'm just all about this game. And I played it so much and beat it so many times, and for me it's like the peak platformer. Like, I think of a platformer, like, this is the default. It's the one that introduced Yoshi, which was a great mechanic.
Yep, I definitely love Yoshi. He was good.
Great world design, great level design, cool overworld, lots of like secrets and things to explore, and just for me, just perfection.
Perfect launch title for the Super Nintendo.
It really showed you
what it could do.
Absolutely.
There are so many good, positive things, and I have already talked about how you probably held your tongue for this one as well, to not spoil it later. But I talked about why I like Super Mario 3 better than Super Mario World, but this game had a lot of positives. I think the overworld actually trumps Super Mario 3's, but the gameplay for Super Mario 3, for me, beats out Super Mario World, but because of the power-ups. Mainly.
Yeah.
I do like Yoshi, but I didn't... I like the singular Mario experience.
I can respect that.
Instead of Yoshi. And the Star Road, phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. That's, like, just such a good final challenge world to go into, yeah.
And the sunken ship and all the detail in the overworlds.
All the, like, secret exits and the ghost worlds and things like that.
There's just this one secret level that has, like, all the items you'll ever need in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's such
the
a good...
top secret area.
Yeah. And it was... That was great to figure out because it's like, now I can just go here every time.
And one of my favorite... I know people are, like, really into video game videos online. My preferred genre of video game videos is people doing ridiculous things in Super Mario World. That's like, I've watched so many of those.
Have you ever seen
What's your favorite example of that?
There are some where people have made ROM hacks, so they've made
custom worlds.
Okay, that's
what I was going to ask you about.
There's a ton of great ROM hacks that are like
like
Kaizo Mario.
I've seen those, yes.
And there's one that's, there's also like the crazy speed runs.
Yep.
There's also, you can do a little glitch where you can like hit buttons in a certain way that like programs in new code.
That's what I've seen, is that it like stores values and you can program things, and somebody like made Pong inside it, and insanity. I can't even think on that level.
Yes, it's such a good Mario title.
All about it, so.
Yep.
Let's hear it, Colin.
All right, my number two, this probably isn't shocking to a lot of people that know me. It's another one of those, it was one of my first games, and I played the crap out of it. It's Paper Mario the 1,000-Year Door. This one may be a little bit surprising to Brian, maybe. I've talked a lot about Paper Mario, the original one, and loving that game, but I don't think I've talked a lot about the 1,000-Year Door. And a couple of reasons why is it's a hidden gem almost. Not a lot of people have played it. The GameCube is really undersold, and a lot of people went to PS2 and Xbox. And there were so many things about this game that stuck with me, and it topped Super Mario RPG. As I talked about in Super Mario RPG, the side characters, which were the main characters for a lot of other Mario games, was really nice, but in this game you had side characters that came out of nowhere, like this girl named Vivian, who's a witch that just is one of the antagonists for most of the game, but then joins your party. And
I always love that twist, like if bad guys join your party.
Yeah,
Dragon Age Origins has one of those too. Yeah,
it it's kind of like an Avatar where you like Zuko, because he comes onto
that's a whole new can of worms.
Yeah, plug to that episode of the podcast, which I
love. Yeah, if you're just joining us or missed the Dewcast, Colin is the number one podcast fan. Earn this podcast fan.
And me and Brian did a podcast about Avatar: The Last Airbender,
which I've listened to three times.
Whoa!
Yes. So, anyways, I was going back. The side characters are phenomenal. And this game, unlike Super Mario RPG, also had Luigi in it. He wasn't a playable character, but it was really cool. You could meet up with him in a couple points in the game and talk to him. And he's having his own adventure alongside Mario, who's having this grand adventure that you get to explore. But there's this like hidden background of Luigi, and he's in Mario's shadow because he's doing like the same thing. But all the side characters that he has hates him. And is only coming on for the ride, not because they love and admire him, but because they're like...
So it sounds like there's just like a ton of really cool flavor in this game.
This game has a lot of good flavor in it. There's like... have you ever seen A Space Odyssey?
Which one? 2001?
2000, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like a talking computer in that one, right?
Yeah, how?
So there's like... They bring one of those... It has one of those and like... The Paper Mario the 1,000-Year Door that's in love with Peach. A computer.
Interesting.
That's in love. And that was really cool, interesting plot twist.
Yeah.
It's not a huge spoiler or anything, so that's why I thought I would bring it up. They had a lot of cool background references to other Nintendo games. And
yeah, there's a lot of pop culture nods.
I always dug the style for the... Just like the flavor and the tongue-in-cheek silliness of like... I know they had the DS games that were not quite the same, but were like the Paper Mario-esque games.
Those have definitely got a positive reception as well. I heard good things. I don't play a lot of portable gaming, but the first two Paper Marios really top-tier games.
Yes.
If you haven't checked them out, you know, I'd recommend both.
As Brian knows, I actually hate the most recent installment of the Paper Mario series. And it threw out a lot of the things that made Paper Mario the 1,000-Year Door special. It took out all the side characters.
Yeah, no party members, right? At least not the same way.
No party members, and it replaced it with a talking crown that floated in the air.
Interesting.
And it took out traveling in the overworld. Like, there was this whole world for another world for you to explore that...
Oh, did it, like, split it down into levels and stuff?
So, it was, like, basically Mario 1, where it's, like, you travel from this level to this level.
That is obnoxious, because I really liked being able to unlock different parts of the world.
Yes, and that's another thing that RPGs have... well, it's kind of like a Metroid game, almost, where you unlock abilities to go back to places in the game.
Yeah, that's always cool. Yeah.
And, threw all of that out in the newest one, and they replaced it with the Mario style of grass world, water world, desert world, and it's like a song that you could repeat over and over again, and it's the same
thing. I hate when people do that.
Exactly, and it's Nintendo just bashes you over the head with this book of this is what Mario is, and we don't want to make it how the creative that it used to be, like in Super Mario RPG
right. And
Paper Mario the 1,000-Year Door. And this is another game.
Yeah, another game in that lineage for you in this series, because this is kind of like the successor to the successor.
Yes,
of Super Mario
Paper
RPG.
Paper Mario was supposed to be Super Mario RPG 2.
Right.
And it got changed because they split off with Square. And they actually partnered with Intelligent Systems, which makes the Fire Emblem games, which is another good connection.
Huh. I didn't know that.
It's another Paper Mario the 1,000-Year Door is another game that I played multiple times, and I revisited it every couple of years.
I think that's a common theme among these. These are all ones that we've played
This is what I've already told the listeners, is that we judged them based on whether we could pick it. I judged it, at least, whether I could pick it up and play it right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's another one that I've played over and over again, and it's like a fine wine that over the years just gets better and better.
So on the subject of a million reps,
okay.
My number two is Tetris.
Oh,
and I knew this one was this classic.
This is a game that I have poured
so good, as they say.
At least, if you were to add it all up, at least a solid year of my life. You know, if you play, spend 8 hours a day sleeping, by the time you're 75, you've slept for 25 years. So Tetris, maybe 2 years. I've played so much Tetris, and I'm pretty good at it. Like those who've seen me go full force. I would consider myself a skilled Tetris player.
Okay.
I whip your guys' ass in I don't know if I was supposed to say that, but in Smash Bros at when we were playing with my coworkers, he would probably destroy me in Tetris based on
if
experience.
There have been several competitive variations, I think I would do quite well. I remember the Facebook version that was up for a long time.
Didn't you get to, like, the top?
Yes, I got to rank 100, God of Tetris. you play it. My longest game lasted about 3-plus hours.
Oh, my goodness.
Ranked up more than 15 million points. If you're lacking any, you know, context for that, it seems less impressive. It was impressive.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like when I got my 750,000 point Peggle thing.
Right. And it's true that if you play so many times for so long as I have, that as you go to sleep, it is burned on the back of your eyelids.
Nice.
And you'll see the connections of the T's fitting into the S's and the squares and the straights and the
It
locks into your brain.
What you're saying reminds me of, I could play the first level of Super Mario Bros. 1 in my head without even picking up a controller. Like, I know the level from back of my hand.
And there tends to be good Russian folk music in there as well.
Yes, the music is really good. And we talked about them bringing the music into Smash Bros., which I thought was a really cool...
Have you heard the ska version of the Tetris
song? I may or may not have played that for you. I'm not sure.
I don't think...
My brothers gave it to me back in the day.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
And maybe you gave it to them, so who knows?
I would doubt that. I don't know.
So, any more last thoughts on Tetris, or are we good to go on to number one?
All right.
So, I am the first one...
Did we get your number two? We did.
Yeah, yes. Okay, Super Mario World.
Okay, great.
So, I'm the first one to do my number one, and it's a little bit sad for me, because I could go on forever about talking this game. A lot of people that know me, it's another not really a shock game. Final Fantasy VII. I held my tongue again when you were talking about Final Fantasy VI because I know this is another one. The community is divided. Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy VII, which again is, I think, is preference. But, man, there is just so much to say about this game. I've heard a lot that it is the Final Fantasy game where you can do the most outside of the story. There are a lot of side quests, and I do agree with that, but man, the story killed it. It was another, when I talked about Super Mario RPG, at the end I said it kind of rose to like this biblical proportion of the angels coming down to save us, but this was the one where it was like a man had become the devil, basically, and you need to stop that. And it was... good. I almost popped out. That's so good.
Sometimes it's earned.
I think it is earned in this one, so I will. It is so good. The characters are great. They're really built up. Each character has, you know, a amount of focus on him, and you got side quests.
Who's your favorite character?
So I'll tell you about my party real quick. I usually had Cloud, Tifa, and Red...
Red 13,
yes. Which my favorite character is Cloud, for a couple of reasons.
He's in Smash.
That's one of them. But another reason is, I don't know. He's really relatable, I guess. That he's like this guy that wants to be something better than he thinks he can be. But I don't know. This is, you might want to plug your ears, Brian. But later in the game, you figure out that what he thought he had become, he never achieved in the first place. So he has this kind of like hopelessness of, I'll never live up to what I thought I could be. I'm never going to beat the villain. What is there left? But his friends carry on and continue, and they fight for his what is right, and they do it so well, where they just have this whole sequence of just playing as the other characters for a little bit, and then Cloud comes back, and he's regained his confidence, and he's ready to face his final challenge, Sephiroth in God mode.
One-winged angel.
Yes,
yeah.
Which is a very popular, probably the most recognizable song of the whole game, besides the battle theme, and the ending tune.
Right.
They play.
Victory theme, yeah.
Yes.
So I actually played a ton of Final Fantasy VII, like, when you were just a toddler back in the day.
Yes. Also, before we do this one, you might want to put up a brief spoiler alert for this, because I did talk about some endgame stuff.
That's okay. You didn't go too deep on anything
specific.
Yeah,
I feel like at this point,
honestly, it's like 20 years at this point. So.
Yeah.
I will say that... I have a lot of reasons to agree with you that this is, like, one of the greatest games, like, I
of
think...
Of all time, in my opinion.
Sephiroth is just, like, such a great villain.
Yeah.
This works so well.
He's like the guy that, in life, who's like, what's my purpose, basically? And I know everyone's thought about that at least once, right?
He's also, like, just cool as hell.
Oh,
so
yep.
He's, like, the counterpoint to Cloud, but he's also, like, way cooler than Cloud in some ways. He's, he's just such a good villain.
And it draws parallels to another really good PS1 game that did not make my top 10, but would make my top 20, Metal Gear Solid 1.
Mm.
Where Metal Gear Solid 1 had the two brothers, Liquid Snake and Solid Snake. And Solid Snake was the one that had all the good genes and was the perfect soldier. And Liquid Snake had all the recessive ones. And the reason for the whole crisis in the first place was that he was so jealous of Solid Snake, so he had to lure him on this island to face him. And Final Fantasy VII is almost the opposite. Sephiroth is the ultimate soldier, and Cloud Strife is just this poor imitation of what Sephiroth right. is, as we figure out later in the story. And they play this off so well. And it has one of... it's a tearjerker. It really is.
Yeah.
And halfway through the game, you'd be balling. Like, part of the basketball.
It also... My last comment of something great, just like a one-off that's so great in FF7, is the spell, the summon Knights of the Round, is just so epic. Like, every time you cast it, it's got like a 3-minute animation to show yeah. all of these like crazy knights swinging their axes, and it's but it makes you feel like you.
The summons are pretty good. I do so really good. Enjoy them.
This is one that I have to play.
You did.
Colin got it for me for Christmas. So
I did.
I have
nice.
No excuse. It was a good gift, and I definitely have to check it out.
The only reason that I put it a little bit below is one. I think I prefer super polished 2D graphics to kind of blocky 3D graphics.
And they so definitely have not aged well.
They're okay. So when I played the game, I played it on the revamped PS4 version. So
okay.
it looks better than the original, because
gotcha.
I played both versions now. And they're making an HD remake, which I'm really happy about. I think that
yeah.
people that haven't played it before should either play it on the revamped version, which I bought for you on Steam.
Oh.
So, or the HD version if you wanted to wait. But you don't have a console to play it on, basically.
Right.
It's for PS4 or really high-end PCs, basically. And
the only other reason I put FF6 above this is that I think the story in FF7 is just a little bit more insane. Like, there's, like, crazy... like
that's what I love about the Final Fantasy series, and they just bring it up to, like, this, like, mega, like, things are going on. You're facing this colossal giant, and
yeah.
you're just this one guy with a huge-ass sword. And
they turn it up to 11.
They do.
So they do.
Good choice for number one.
And Limit Breaks, which you touched on your
love
top
Limit Breaks.
Top 100s, they are great.
Great gameplay
mechanic. One of my favorites.
Materia, I love Materia.
I love that they added Materia is really good also, because you can just become OP. And there's a quest that takes away all your Materia, and then you're like helpless. You're like a lost child, and you don't
yeah,
know what
oh,
to
that's
do.
A good, yeah. I also love the bonus extra hard bosses that are the weapons, ruby weapon, emerald
yep.
weapon.
I beat what was the one that you face in the story? The diamond weapon? I actually beat that one, and there's like an achievement for
nice.
It. But one last thing.
I don't remember that one.
One
okay.
last thing I want to say is the intro is great, because
the intro is perfect.
It brings you into the small world, and you don't really expect for, at least I didn't when I first played it, for it to expand. Because it had a really big city for you to play in. And
it's like a third of the game is just
yes,
in the city.
Yep. And then it's like you get out of the city and the whole world is in front of you. It's
yeah.
like, I thought that
great
this,
moment.
I thought that this game was just going to keep me in the city, and that would be a fine game on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But then, bam! All right. this other stuff, everything opens up to you. Great. I've gushed on for long enough about Final Fantasy VII, and I want to hear about your guys'. Number one. So
what's the order at this
Brian,
point? Me? All right.
Next.
Number one. Often paired with Final Fantasy VII is, whether it's the number one of its era, I've got Ocarina of Time.
Ah.
Interesting.
Here at number one.
Well, you know,
wait, did you have Majora's Mask at number 10?
Number 9.
Oh, okay.
So, interesting about that is people always have the Cloud versus Link matchup for some reason. And they finally got to do that in Smash Bros. Anyway.
That's true.
Continue.
Okay, so this is a game... First played it shortly after it came out when I was 8 years old. Really, it was my introduction to the fantasy genre as a whole. I feel like we've said so many good things about the game so far that how do I even begin to attack Ocarina of Time? Fantastic score by Koji Kondo.
Yes.
You know, I feel like they gave him the template of, okay, you have an instrument that can play four notes. Come up with every good melody you can think of that can be played.
And he did.
And he did. And that was one of the only down notes about Majora's Mask, is that then they went to him again and said, okay, do it again.
Yeah.
And he had tapped his possibilities.
Yeah, they reused
like,
a lot
of them. It's like, what are you gonna do past that point? But, you know, it could be wrong, because I haven't played that many of the 2D games, but the idea of having an instrument in your arsenal... you know, Link is just a well-rounded dude. He works with the sword, but he's also got the
with
magic,
and
he plays an instrument. So he just checks all the boxes.
it.
Great dungeon design. You get a good variety of levels. You get a time travel component, and I'm a sucker for time travel.
Time travel is great.
It's good on the waifu front.
It is,
you
good
know, Link is like a James Bond.
Do you wanna go on the controversy?
There's a lot of women who are after Link.
What about the Sheik controversy?
That's a whole other can of worms.
So
that could be a post.
We talked about this at work. I just want to. Could you?
Okay. So my take on it is now. Okay. Well, we had said if we're worried at all about spoilers, there's going to be some spoilers here because
it's the Ocarina of Time is basically known because of Smash Brothers, so it doesn't even matter.
All right. Well, so somebody that you rendezvous with throughout the second half of the game when you're an adult is Sheik, this mysterious ninja type character. Who later, it turns out, is Princess Zelda in disguise. But nowadays, in all the game media, they'll refer to Sheik as she.
Wait.
No, in the menu, in the booklets and things, they'll use the pronoun she for Sheik. And I don't think it works, because Sheik is a male role played by a female.
So
Alright, I'm going to keep talking.
Okay, yep.
So if a female is playing George Washington, that doesn't make George Washington a she. All right, it's a costume that it's a role that is portrayed by a female.
It goes into the social construct of identifying as a different gender.
I suppose so, but I would still say that the character that she was playing is a male,
which is a really weird because it's like a kid's game and it's a really weird stance to take on it. But I think it's an interesting discussion either way. But I just wanted you to briefly. Voice your opinion about it.
Right, so that's where I'm coming from on that topic. But other things related to Ocarina of Time, great variety of items, really compelling story, and where I come down on it versus Majora's Mask is it's much more personal. While I liked in Majora's Mask that you have to get out there in the community and bond with people outside the self, Ocarina of Time is really on the Triforce and the people that embody it. So it's Link and it's Zelda and it's Ganondorf and their relationship together.
The first appearance of Ganondorf.
Right, the human form of Ganon.
True Confessions of Dan, I've never played Ocarina of Time.
Really?
I mean, I might have played the first, like, hour of it, but I've never... Played it.
Yeah. So Dan it colored my notions of romance, of self. It feels good to save the world.
Good. Yeah.
And that's my number one.
We all have like experiences like that in different media where like that is the thing that defines your perception of like that medium. Like The Simpsons is that for me in TV. Mm-hmm. And we were talking previously about like Harry Potter is that for us in books or when I say us, I mean me and my wife and people our generation in general.
It doesn't stick with me as much personally, and I know people are going to scream at me for that one, but it's my opinion, so.
Right. So where's your number one, Dan?
All
right,
I'm excited for this one. This is probably my most anticipated.
All right, so I was tempted to do what Colin did with Smash and just say all of the games in this series.
Yeah, but it's a super cop-out, but I went with it.
I was able to identify the one that's my favorite, and I'm very comfortable saying this is my favorite game of all time.
Okay, good.
So, it is from 2009.
Mm.
It is Mass Effect 2,
another
BioWare game. So,
all right.
The Mass Effect series for me is like... I mean, it's got its quirks, and a lot of people like have... retroactively devalued it because the ending in Mass Effect 3 is kind of lackluster, but to me this is like basically what I want the direction of gaming to be. Like I want more game want more games to be like this where it's like just an utterly fantastic story. But what's even better than the story is like the characters. Like the characters are on par with my favorite characters in like any movie, any TV show, any book, and you like get to really interact with them, and your relationship with them can develop in different ways. I mentioned when I was talking about Dragon Age Origins how like one of the staples of a good BioWare game is like you get into the gameplay, but then you also realize that you're looking forward to the downtime more because that's when you get to experience the character development by like, hey, chatting with this character during camp, like, tell me a little bit, what did you do before you joined our party? And like, I don't know.
I agree with that. That's a thing I experienced with Fire Emblem, which I talked about earlier. So I definitely understand that point of view, and I wholeheartedly agree with you on that one.
So I also mentioned previously that, like, good voice acting, like, really engages me with a character, and Mass Effect 2 has... I mean, the Mass Effect series in general has the best voice acting from any series, like, in total of any series that I've encountered.
Interesting.
Are you biting
Well, no,
something?
I just, I don't know exactly. It just seems like a bold, a broad claim. Best of it, well, you said of any series you've encountered.
As
so
a proprietor
yeah, but of any series, period, I don't know. I wouldn't, that's not even a judgment I'd be able to make.
Well,
I think.
Part of it is because there's the, like, there's a lot of characters, like, probably in Mass Effect 2, you get something like 15 to 20 characters on your team. They all have unique voice actors. They all have a lot of dialogue throughout the game. So, like, and all of them are really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mass Effect 2, it has the least story but the most character out of all of the games.
Okay.
In fact, like, the major component of the game is that you're, like, recruiting a team. And then each character also has, like, basically, as you talk to them, they, like, reveal their past. And they say, oh, this is something that happened to me in the past that I'd like to revisit at some point. And so you get to go, like, earn their loyalty on loyalty missions. You're like, oh, you had, like, a failed assassination mission and someone betrayed you? Let's go find that person who betrayed you and, like, close that loop. So it's got, like, for each character, a fantastic sense of character development. And the cool thing is, like, in the ending, it's this, they call it the suicide mission, like, when they're casually talking about it.
Uh-huh.
You basically, like... The story is pretty simple, like, the framing story is pretty simple. Like, you're trying to learn more about this alien race, and then you figure out what they are, and then you go try to stop them. It's, like, a super simple framing story.
Okay.
But the actual story is within, like, all the characters. And when you go do the suicide mission to basically go encounter the those aliens, the things that you've done with people previously determine what happens there. So, like, characters that you haven't earned your loyalty for, like, might not follow your orders, and they might die, like, permanently for the rest of the series in the game.
Yeah.
And then future games that plays out, that character is dead, and everybody just acts like they're dead, which, like, they can live or they can die.
So the later sequels are actually connected to what
yeah,
you've done
import,
in the previous...
Yeah,
you import your
save.
That's so cool!
In the entire Mass Effect series, you import your save from one to the next,
that's
so decisions you make impact it.
Wow.
I could have found a spot... Yeah. For all three Mass Effects in my top 10, I think one has become a little bit overrated because some purists say, "Oh, it's the most RPG-ish." To me, it's the most silly out of like the stories, and the characters are the least interesting. Two is the best for me, best characters. You get to learn the most about the characters. Three is great if you've played the first two because it brings all of the stories from the first two games to climaxes. And the actual ending is a little bit cheesy and deserves a lot of its criticism, but, man, this series for me is, like, one of my favorite things ever. It's, like, I'm just so into this series. And for me, like, when I first played Mass Effect 2, I just, like, it's one of the only, like, one-player campaign story games where literally the second it finished, I was like, I need to go play it again. See the different things that could happen.
Final,
like,
Fantasy VII was that for me. I needed to play it again.
Especially because you can, like, make different decisions and see what happens. And then, how can I make these characters die and these survive? Like, what if I... There's, like, just so many decisions to make, and it, like... Oh, it's... I mean, for me, the fact that... There's, like,
it's what? Almost, it's what, Dan?
It's
what?
So good!
Yes!
That's what it is!
We did it! We all do. We all do a seven.
Several times.
I meant for our top, our one.
Oh,
because I did a so good.
I don't know. I may have deployed mine in two a little prematurely.
That's
but
okay.
That's a little taste of where we're coming from in terms of favorite games,
but,
or maybe a pretty long taste.
Yeah,
but.
This is where I want games to go: more story, more decision making, more character development that you feel like you actually get to know the characters and relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is for me. So
story is great in games, and I think story in games has been underlooked currently.
Yeah. And I didn't even talk about the fact that there's six different classes you can play as, and it plays utterly different for every single class.
I too love a great story. My favorite thing about games, I think, is they give you the ability to do some things that you wouldn't be able to in real life.
That's what games are all about, doing whatever that you couldn't do in real life, and That's why any video gamer can probably tell you that that person loves them.
So I guess we should each count down our top 10 just one more time.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
All so right. My top 10, number 10, Basketball GM, number 9, Peggle, number 8, Portal, number 7, Shining Force 2, number 6, The Sims 3, number 5, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, number 4, Final Fantasy 6, number 3, Dragon Age Origins, number 2, Super Mario World, and number 1, Mass Effect 2.
Mine, number 10, Amazing Island. Number 9, Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. Number 8, Ms. Pac-Man. Number 7, Fallout 3. Number 6, Super Mario Galaxy 2. Number 5, Super Smash Bros. 4, Wii U. Number 4, Destroy All Humans. Number 3, Katamari Damacy. Number 2, Tetris. And number 1, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Alright, and finally mine. Number 10, Super Mario Bros. 3. Number 9, Fire Emblem Fates. Number 8, Banjo-Kazooie. Number 7, Legend of Zelda A Link to the Past. Number 6, Super Mario RPG. Number 5, Bioshock Infinite. 4, Super Smash Bros. 3, Super Mario Sunshine. 2, Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door. And number 1, Final Fantasy VII. Which, it looked like on my list, the names just got longer and longer. Except for the last one.
Yeah, but, I mean, some game titles are unwieldy. You got to boil them down a little bit.
That's
yeah.
Okay.
Whether it be an abbreviation or what have you.
I forgot to touch up on... I was basing my games on whether I could play them a lot. And I listed a lot, a good amount of RPGs. And one thing that people complain a lot about is grinding. But I think that if in an RPG, the gameplay is... so good that you can just play it over and over again. The grinding doesn't matter to me.
Well, I would say in general, like, the result of this conversation is that I just want to go play so many games right
exactly.
now. And, like, just dig deep into them. And, like, I'm pretty psyched about... First of all, like, my games that on my list, I'm just like, I gotta go play them all again.
Yeah.
I just want to play them all again.
I've learned about some that I want to try.
Exactly. So now I'm like, oh, Destroy All Humans... That's yep. always been on my to playlist, and there's a bunch of them so.
Yeah, I've definitely wanted
Maybe
to.
Maybe now's the time
so
I actually.
Sound off
it,
in the comments
arena.
Ones that you're either going to try or things we left out or what your favorite games were.
Yep, and I actually did do that. I did replay and revisit all of my top 10 before we did this podcast.
Wow,
that's
dedication.
Prep. Yeah.
I going back through them, I was like, it solidified it.
Good.
But what else but dedication would you expect from the number one podcast?
There we go.
Yeah, yep. I go all in. There's a bunch of dew sitting in front of us right now after this dew cast. So, you know.
Go big or go home.
Go
that's the common
do
way.
The dew. And
play the games?
Yeah.
So nice. go play some games.
Yeah.
Don't go outside.
Yeah, basically.
Drink Mountain Dew and play video games.
What I actually did is
what we're encouraging you to do with this podcast.
Yep. Enjoy.
I listened to EarnThis.net podcast while I'm playing video games. So
awesome.
That's a great idea for you listeners to do if you would like.
All right, well, I guess we're wrapping up now. That was a very fun countdown.
Yeah, Monster Podcast. Thanks for joining us on the journey.
Yes.
So this is Dan.
This is Colin.
And Brian.
And we're signing out. Thank you for counting down our top 10 games with us.
Oh, yeah, and I hope to do this again in some other topic in the future.
For sure. Good night.
Good night.
Bye. Na 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 na